Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. School Education is the third volume in Charlotte Mason and the Home Education series, a major work in late 19th and early 20th century educational thought. This illustrated edition presents the text in a newly formatted form while preserving the substance of the original. Apart from editorial adjustments such as omitted contents lists, page numbers, and index material, the book addresses the education of children in the elementary years, often associated with ages 9 to 12, and belongs to the genre of educational philosophy, with practical implications for homeschooling, private schooling, and teacher formation. Mason writes from a distinctly Christian view of the child as a full person, not an empty vessel to be filled, or a problem to be managed. Her purpose is to define an education that cultivates intellect, moral habits, imagination, attention, and relationship with the natural and cultural world through rich books, disciplined routines, and thoughtful adult guidance. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the child as a person rather than a passive recipient of instruction. A central principle of school education is that children are born persons, capable of serious thought, moral response, curiosity, and intellectual appetite. Mason rejects approaches that treat children mainly as products of conditioning, exam preparation, or adult convenience. This view changes the role of education. The teacher does not manufacture intelligence from the outside, but places the child in contact with worthy ideas, ordered habits, and meaningful work. The implication is practical as well as philosophical. If a child is a person, lessons should not be reduced to mechanical drills, excessive explanation, or rewards and punishments that bypass genuine interest. Mason expects children to meet demanding material, but she also insists that they be respected as minds able to respond directly to knowledge. This position gives her method its unusual combination of rigor and gentleness. The child is neither indulged as the sole director of learning nor suppressed under authoritarian routine. Instead, education becomes a disciplined encounter between a living mind and a broad world of knowledge. Secondly, living books as the primary route into knowledge and imagination. School education gives strong importance to what later readers call living books, meaning books written with literary force, intellectual substance, and a sense of direct engagement with the subject. Mason contrasts these with thin summaries or heavily simplified instructional texts that present facts without vitality. Her concern is not merely stylistic. A well-written book gives the child access to an authorial mind, a coherent picture of events or ideas, and language rich enough to nourish attention and expression. This approach also limits the tendency of teachers to over-explain. Instead of filtering all knowledge through lectures and worksheets, the teacher selects worthy books and asks the child to attend, narrate, and assimilate. The reasoning behind this method is that knowledge is absorbed more deeply when it arrives as meaningful thought rather than disconnected information. Living books also support moral and imaginative formation because they present human actions, natural realities, history, and beauty in memorable form. Mason therefore treats reading not as a separate skill alone, but as the central medium of a generous education. Thirdly, a broad curriculum designed to form many relations with the world, Mason resists a narrow curriculum built only around utilitarian subjects or measurable performance. In school education, the child should encounter literature, history, geography, nature study, science, art, music, poetry, handicrafts, and religious instruction in age-appropriate ways. The purpose is not superficial variety, but the formation of many relations. A child becomes more fully educated by knowing people from history, observing plants and animals, hearing excellent language, studying maps, appreciating art, and reasoning about the created world. This breadth reflects Mason and her conviction that knowledge is interconnected and that children are capable of more than adults often assume. It also protects education from becoming merely competitive or vocational. The curriculum is generous because the child is worthy of a rich intellectual life, not only basic training. At the same time, Mason does not advocate random exposure. The adult remains responsible for selection, order, and consistency. Breadth must be disciplined by quality, sequence, and regular attention, so that children form lasting relationships with subjects rather than passing through disconnected activities. Fourthly, habit formation is the bridge between character and learning. School education treats habit formation as one of the foundations of both moral development and academic work. Mason sees habits such as attention, truthfulness, order, punctuality, diligence, and self-control as acquired patterns that make freedom possible. This is not a behaviorist system in the modern sense because the goal is not merely external compliance. Habit frees the child from constant struggle against distraction or disorder, allowing the mind to give itself more readily to worthy tasks. The habit of attention is especially important. Short, well-designed lessons require the child to concentrate fully, and the lesson ends before dawdling becomes normal. this approach differs from both harsh discipline and permissive looseness. The teacher carefully builds conditions in which good habits can take root, then expects the child to act within those conditions. Mason also links habit with moral responsibility. Character is shaped through repeated actions, not only through sermons or intentions. In this sense, education includes the training of the will, but it does so through steady practice rather than pressure or emotional manipulation. Lastly, masterly inactivity and the disciplined restraint of the teacher. One of the more distinctive ideas associated with Mason is masterly inactivity, a phrase that can be misunderstood as neglect or passivity. In School Education and the wider series, it refers to an adult posture of wise restraint. The parent or teacher prepares an ordered environment, provides suitable books and lessons, establishes habits, and sets moral expectations, but does not interfere unnecessarily with every difficulty, choice, or consequence. This matters because overmanagement can weaken initiative, judgment, and responsibility. Children need room to attempt tasks, make manageable mistakes, pursue wholesome interests, and experience the natural results of their actions. At the same time, Mason is not advocating child-led education in the sense of abandoning adult authority. Although the inactivity is masterly because it rests on prior discipline, observation, and confidence in the child as a person, it asks adults to distinguish between necessary guidance and anxious control. This principle gives Mason education much of its balance. It is structured without being intrusive, demanding without being oppressive, and respectful without surrendering the adult duty to guide. In conclusion, school education is most useful for homeschooling parents, classical educators, Christian school teachers, curriculum designers, and readers interested in alternatives to textbook-driven or test-centered education. Its practical value lies in the way it connects curriculum, habit, attention, books, nature, and moral formation into one coherent philosophy rather than treating them as separate techniques. Readers can gain a sharper understanding of why book selection matters, why short-focused lessons may be more effective than prolonged unfocused ones, and why character formation cannot be detached from daily educational practice. The book also offers an intellectual benefit by challenging modern assumptions that children need constant simplification, entertainment, or external incentives before they can learn. Compared with many education manuals, it stands out because it is not merely a list of methods. It rests on a developed anthropology of the child, a religious and moral vision of knowledge, and a distinctive trust in direct contact with great books and the natural world. Some readers may need to adapt its Christian framework and period language to contemporary contexts, but its central arguments remain influential because they combine respect for the child with seriousness about discipline, culture, and intellectual nourishment. If you would like to support Charlotte Mason, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.